All right. Great to see you all. Good evening. Hope you had a beautiful Yom Tov. Here we are, the Sunday after Parshas Bereishis. And
Wow.
obviously, we want to, it's, I don't know about the rest of you, but when you have a 3-day Yom Tov like this, it was very difficult to look over the Parsha because Thursday and Friday were focused on Shmini Atzeres and Simchas Torah and all of its lessons. And then you blink and then, like, okay, they went Bereishis. Now we're up to Noach. It's a lot to take in. So I'm gonna try and focus tonight. I am a little hoarse from the yomtiv, so bear with me. But there was a joke back in the 80s. I think it was a commercial actually, once upon a time, an advertising campaign back in New York. And there were huge billboards that had a slogan that said, "You have a friend in the Chase Manhattan Bank." You guys ever remember that? Anyone? Chase Manhattan Bank? Does that sound familiar? Well, underneath one of them, someone had crossed out the words and scribbled under it and said, "Yes, but in Bank Leumi, you are mishpacha." So it was a brilliant move because, everybody wants to see Chase Manhattan. Oh, yes, you have a friend here, right? But at the end of the day, when it comes about the Jewish people and the Israeli mentality, it's all about mishpacha, baby. It's all about family. And the truth is that if you read the Torah in general, the Torah takes for granted that whenever it talks about social legislation of how to deal interpersonal relationships, it uses terminology of family all the time. When your brother is impoverished, right? It's not literally your brother. It means your relative. Or, right, if your brother is experiencing this, let him live with you. Reach out. Don't charge interest to your brother. It very, very often will use that kind of terminology. Your brother becomes impoverished, like I said. If he's indebted to you, make sure that you don't profit from him by charging interest. If your brother is sold to you, don't work him like a slave. We find this term over and over and over again. We as Jews, we don't look at each other as just citizens of the same nation. It's much more than that. We look at it as a family. And there's many, many examples of where the Jewish people are viewed as a family. I'd even go so far as to say that if you look at the entire book of Bereishis, the entire book of Genesis, it really is the story, because I know we've talked about this. There's 613 mitzvot in the whole Torah, but there's only three in the entire first book. There's only three of them. So then why do we have, I don't know, 40 something chapters in the book? So one answer that's given is that if you look at the development of civilization, the development of humanity, what you find is this development of a family unit. It starts as an individual, as Adam, Adam and Chava. Yes, they're a team, they're a husband and wife team. And yes, they have children, but then there's sibling rivalry between Cain and Hevel, Cain and Abel. And then next thing you know is that they're kicked out of the garden. And the next thing you have is 10 generations leading till Noah. Well, next week's parsha, we already know Noah is the story God makes the decision that the world had become so degenerate it needs to start again. It needs a reboot, probably because they ate from an apple, and apples are constantly getting viruses that need rebooting, but that's for another conversation. Ha ha, okay. Right? And then it goes 10 more generations until you get to Avraham Avinu, till Abraham, our patriarch. And here also, you have a husband, you have Sarah, his wife, and yes, ultimately they have children. But again, it's not a family unit until Jacob. Jacob is really the first one that is identified in the Torah as a family. In fact, at the end of the book of Bereishis, when they finally go down to Egypt after the whole story of Joseph and his brothers, right? You guys remember these stories? So they go down, The Torah actually identifies that Yaakov goes as Ish Ubeto, a man and his household. It's the first time, really, that it's identified as a household. Even the beginning of the very first verse in the book of Exodus, in the book of Shemos, it starts with the same words. Ve'ela Shemot b'nei Yisrael. These are the names of the children of Israel. Haba'im Mitzrayma. They came down to Egypt. Ish u'beiso ba'u. Each man and his household, they came. The entire book of Genesis is really built on this premise of teaching us about a family unit. Okay? We just finished the high holiday season. And one of the marked prayers that has become, I think, almost universally known and well known is Avinu Malkeinu. The Avinu Malkeinu, we sing it, it's very powerful. For an extra bonus, somebody tell me who gets credited with writing or authoring the very first grouping of Avinu Malkeinu.
Rabbi Akiva.
Ding, 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 ding. Irv, you win a prize. That is correct, Rabbi Akiva. But note the words, Avinu Malkeinu. If there was no family unit, or that was not a major focus, then Malkeinu should suffice. Because ultimately, we're coming to God as a king. And I have to admit that I was rebellious against my king. I'm asking forgiveness for my king. I'm asking my king to have rahmanis, to have mercy on me. But that's not how we approach it. Even our relationship with God, not just with each other, but with God, begins with the premise of Avinu. He's our Father in heaven. So family is absolutely fundamental when it comes to Judaism. Okay. But let's try to understand. Well, let me say it this way. It probably would explain why we have a concept of Kol Yisrael Arevim Zeh LaZeh. All Jews are guarantors one for the other. It's a famous expression, which means I'm responsible for your behavior as you are responsible for mine. I have to take into consideration how you're doing. That is my obligation. It's not like the perception today of where I'm okay, you're okay. You do your thing, I do my thing, and everybody's happy. That is not a Torah perspective at all. The famous Medrash that tells us people are on a boat. You guys know this, right? Famous, they're on the boat, and one fellow takes out a drill and he starts drilling a hole in the bottom under his seat. And of course, all the people on the boat come, "What are you crazy? What are you doing?" Yay. He says, "What's it to you? I paid for this seat. This is my seat. It only pertains to me." Says the Medrash, obviously, that's a ridiculous argument because the impact will be on everybody, the ripple effect. That perception, or that perspective, I should say, of where my actions have direct responsibilities on repercussions on others, that is the Jewish way of looking at things. I need to make sure that I'm doing the right thing, but that you're also doing the right thing. I can't say it's not my problem. There is no such thing. We care about each other. Kol Yisrael, all of Israel, Arevim ze lazeh, our guarantors, cosigners, one for the other, right? When one Jew is injured, all the Jews feel the pain. As we have unfortunately seen time and time again, right? We watch every morning, right? One of the first things we do is we always check to see if anything's going on in Israel. We care. Well, it's that it doesn't pertain to me. I'm living comfortably here in the United States. Wrong. That's not how we look at it. We look at it as a family. But my question to you is why? Why is Judaism built on this model of a family? What is it about a family unit that expresses an important or important ideas and lessons that are found that are not found without a family unit? Let me open it up to you. Why is Judaism so important to be built on a family structure? What do you think?
take a wild shot.
Yeah.
Is it our history that makes us rich? They say that the cliche makes us rich and from generation to generation, door by door, right? We
That's
live and
true,
learn.
but is that a family? Maybe it's just nationhood. We're citizens of the same nation. How many Greeks care about other Greeks? They may, but it's more of a, when I drive through Bexley and there's a sign when you first come in, coming from Columbus City into Bexley, there's a sign, "Welcome to Bexley, winners of the NCAA Division II," whatever it was back in 19, whatever, 2000 something, right? Why is that so important to have a sign up for that? Why? Who cares? The answer is that maybe I don't even know who my neighbor is on the next street. But one thing we do have, we share a bond. What's that? The Ohio State University. That's what we share. We're Buckeyes. We are proud residents of Columbus. We are proud residents of Bexley, where we are the winners of the, I don't even know what your first name is, but we share that commonality. That doesn't make you family, though. That's
So,
just,
Rabbi,
yeah. So what is it that's family, more than just nationhood?
so we all share the Har Sinai. All the souls were together at Har Sinai.
Correct.
So
So
that should unite us.
it does. But
So
why
that
does
should
that
unite
make
us
us
as a nation.
family? What if we were not related, Mark? What if we were not actually related coming from Avraham Avinu? But we all experienced the Sinai experience together. How about the people you graduated college with? You all experienced the graduation as a class. You're not a family. Yeah, maybe for your 25th anniversary, you guys will get together and you'll talk about the good old days and blah. You're not family. You share a common experience. There's something more that says it's family. You got to dig deep for this, folks. What is, I'll give you a hint. What is the very first relationship in history?
Adam and Eve.
Okay, Adam and Eve, and then Cain and Abel, right? Before you blink, if you weren't paying attention yesterday in shul and you weren't following the parsha, or you went out to use the facilities and you came and you missed the first aliyah, you have no idea how history started. I mean, you missed all the key players. If you came in chapter 3, you're already up the Garden of Eden.
So wouldn't Avraham Avinu, I mean, everything really started with Avraham Avinu. That's why we call him Avraham Avinu.
Yes, it's interesting that we call him Avinu, our
Avraham
father, right? But
Right.
I'm going to argue that it even, I'm going to say that there's a primal force, there's a primal bond that is built in when you create a family. You may care about your classmate, you may care deeply for your classmate, but are you going to jump into the river to save your classmate necessarily? I don't know. Would you risk it all? Would you lend them $1 million on a risky proposition? Would you do it for your brother? I hear a difference. I could see myself doing anything for my family. I think all of you would. Nothing is thicker than blood. Nothing. Your family is everything. Without it, yeah, wonderful relationships. I have wonderful friends, great neighbors, fantastic colleagues that I work with that I care deeply about. But when push comes to shove, and it's my family versus family comes first, always has to. The most primal, most powerful moral bond is with family, right? Would you jump into the river to save your brother? No, maybe not. Would you do it for two brothers or eight cousins? Yeah. Probably. You would. I think it's something that goes very, very deep. But I'll tell you even more. Rabbi Sacks, Rabbi Dr. Lord Jonathan David, Rabbi whatever Sacks, right? He talks about strong families being the essential for any free society. Because he says, I'll read you his words here. Great word. Where families are strong, a sense of altruism exists that can be extended outward from family to friends, to neighbors, to community, and from there to the nation as a whole. Why should I care about my neighbor? Where do I learn to care for someone else that's not me? Where is that the kernel, the essential point of where I learn to care for another human being? Where is
Love thy neighbor as thyself.
where does that, it's built on a premise though.
The Torah
Starts,
with your
yeah, I get
family.
the Torah, but where's the starting point? What relationship?
With your own family.
It's your own family. Because you learn to care for your mom, you learn to care for your dad, and vice versa. The fact that mom and dad ca cared for me, you learn a sense of responsibility of caring for another human being. Then you can extend it outward to your neighbor, to your friends, and ultimately to everyone in your nation. But it started with family. If you grew up, God forbid, someone who grows up in a very dysfunctional family, who never learned to care, who never learned to love, they have the hardest time relating to everybody else because it wasn't practiced in the family unit. Think about that. We all know people that unfortunately came from such families. It is an extremely difficult challenge for them because it wasn't modeled. We thank God everybody here has a very wonderful, strong family relationship. And from there, you can learn to build it outwards. Using your expression, Jim.
Love thy neighbor as thyself.
Love your neighbor as yourself. What is the premise that it's built on?
That you care about yourself and you're going to watch
Yes,
out for
that's
yourself.
correct. But one second, if I care about myself, how am I supposed to then apply that to my neighbor? He's not me. How do I do that? In fact, I would argue it's just the opposite. He, whatever it is that I have, I'm going to have to give to my neighbor? That's taking it away from me. How could I possibly love anybody more than myself? Love thy neighbor as thyself? That's crazy. How could the Torah even ask us to do something like that? It seems impossible. Mark, who do you love the most? Be honest. Be honest. Either Mark, I don't care. No, all of a sudden
Well, it's tough.
everybody doesn't know where the mute button is anymore.
It's tough. Go ahead, Mark.
I guess our family.
Why? Who do you love more? Before
It?
you got married, before you married, Mark, who did you love the most?
Name the girls. I'm scared.
Yourself.
His
Right.
dog. Easy. Yourself. Right, right,
Yourself.
right.
We are born selfish creatures. My three favorite people, me, myself, and I. Those are my three favorite people. Yeah, but it's amazing. As we mature, hopefully, we learn that it's not all about me, but rather I can have a bond and a relationship with somebody that I view as a part of me, even. That's what a spouse is. You see each other as one unit. We are one.
That's for sure.
Totally one. And those, right? And if you're blessed and you have children, you see them as an extension of you. Of course you love them. That's the way it works. And if you can learn to expand your love, not just for yourself, but to see others as part of your group, then it becomes so much easier. Sure, I can love my neighbor as myself because I have learned to expand my definition of self. I can relate to others. They're all a part of me. They're all a part of my circle. Sure. The Torah is not asking me to put someone else over my, it's impossible. You can't do that. Everyone. I mean, I think Rick's a nice guy, but push comes to shove, my family comes first. That's the way it is. Love you dearly, but to a point. But I care enough that I'm willing to push myself. On a night I could be watching football, but no. Rick says we have to have a class, so we have a class. Okay. This was your idea, by the way. I know Jimmy restarted it, but this is all your fault. All your fault, Rick Hoffman. Sorry.
Yeah. That's what I caused.
So this is what Rabbi Sacks is suggesting. And that is Judaism is built on this model of family because strong families is essential for a society to function well. Because what you do is you learn the model of caring, of loving, of making others a larger family. You always hear the expression, right? You know, how is your Yontif, Rabbi? Oh, it's great. I had a wonderful time. I spent it with 250 of my closest friends and family. Really? You have that many? No, but that's what it becomes. Listen to a story. There was a guy back in the 1930s. Many of you may have heard of him. His name was Lord Richard Attenborough. You ever hear of him? Sir David Attenborough. And there was a third brother, John Attenborough. They were living with their parents. I'm reading you the story here. I found it. It's fascinating. Rabbi Sacks brought this story. They were living with their parents in England, and two young girls, ages 10 and 12, were staying with them for a short while. Their mother had recently died, and their father had been taken as a prisoner in Germany. This is 1939. The plan was that the girls would soon journey to the United States, where they had relatives, but then war was declared, and they realized that they would now be unable to cross the Atlantic. What was to be done? Listen to brilliant parents. The Attenborough parents wanted to offer the girls, give me 1 second. I just want to get another thing of water. Hold on. Sorry. The Attenborough parents wanted to offer the girls a home for the duration of the war, but they felt it was a decision that could only be made as a family. Richard never forgot how his parents called him and his two brothers into the study and told them the situation. They explained that the two girls, Helga and Irene, were Jewish and without a home. They had escaped to the UK on the Kinder transport, but they had no one to care for them and nowhere to go. Lord Attenborough recalled his parents' words, quote, "We want to adopt the girls. We think it's the right thing to do, but we will only do it if you agree. It will call for sacrifices. We were already a family of five. Now we will be a family of seven. There will be things that we won't be able to afford. There will be things you will have to share. One of those will be love. You know how much we love you. But now you will have to share that love with Helga and Irene. We will have to show them special affection because you have a family, but now they have no one at all." The boys agreed. And thinking back to that day, Lord Attenborough describes it as the most important day of his life. He had been given the chance to sacrifice something for someone else. He had been invited by his parents to join them in an act of courage and generosity. The Attenboroughs never lost touch with Helga and Irene, who they immediately accepted as their sisters. And he said, they help shape our lives and we love them. What a great story about what this idea is. If you can build within the family unit and call it a family unit, it does nothing, has nothing to do with biology. It has to do with, do you view others as part of your family unit? If the answer is yes, then you've expanded your definition. It works. Are there apparent divisions? Yes. There's nothing like a family fight. There's nothing like it. Sibling rivalry starts the beginning of the Torah. Cain and Abel. Just go a few parshiot. Joseph and his brothers. Yeah, it's true. You can argue with a friend, and tomorrow he may no longer be your friend. But if you argue with a brother, you know what? Tomorrow, he's still your brother. Yeah, it gets messy. It gets bad. It gets ugly. But families do fight. That is true. It's a fact. And the Torah does, as I said, it presents ancestors that are realistic. These are true models. These are human elements of relationships. The Torah never shies away from it. It presents an accurate picture of brothers fighting. That is true. Mistakes that are made, faults, but ways to improve, ways to overcome. What happens at the very end of the book of Bereishis, at the very end of the book of Genesis? What does Jacob do? He gathers all of his sons together. It was a unique moment in history that he was going to bless them all, which he does. The very next chapter, the beginning of the book of Exodus, what are there? As I said to you, the Israelites are described for the first time as a people. It's the first time. First, have to figure out how do we live as a family. If we can figure that out, then we're ready for the next stage to become a nation. We cannot be a nation as people of, I don't care, we can share Avram Avinu as our ancestor, but we cannot be a successful nation if we can't learn first to live as a family. That has to be step number one. Families are the key to all of it. You know what else? It's also the most powerful vehicle for continuity. If I don't have a family unit, which means, who was it? Mark, you said, in terms of Midor Lidor, there's a concept of going from generation to generation. That's a family concept. That's not just a nation. Because again, just because so-and-so has a child and someone else has a child doesn't mean it's family. Okay, they may share commonalities, but a family that goes from generation to generation to generation, that allows us to ride the wave of any kind of change that comes along, because that's what a family can do. Changes are expected to affect us in the world, not in a single generation. It takes time. It has to be developed. The entire book of Bereishis, anyone have a clue? How many years does it span from the time Adam and Eve are created till the time Jacob and his sons all go down to Egypt? How many years are we talking? Quick guess.
4,000.
No. Like,
too high.
Told me to guess.
It's a lot. He's right.
Come on. What do you think, Rick?
I don't know. 2,000.
You just randomly pick a number?
He said 4. You said it was too high. Give me a break. I know it's a lot. And then later in the later parshas, mm-hmm. it's a little.
Yeah.
Like the last parsha was just like Moshe's, you know, what is it, 70 years or something? Like, it's like not long at all.
Last parsha is what?
Not parsha, the whole book. The last
the book of Devarim?
Yeah.
It's much less than that.
Well, it's like his last, the last, was it,
Year.
oh, that's his last, you're right. It's like,
Yeah.
2 months or something, right?
Yeah,
It's,
it's his last will and testament. It's
yeah,
the end of the book.
very short,
Yes.
like
Yeah.
days, 60 days or
Yeah, but
something.
the I'll just put it in perspective, and you already knew this, Jim. Shame on you. You forgot. What year was Abraham born? What Hebrew year?
1948.
1948. So Abraham is already almost at the 2000 mark. 1948. Again, easy way to remember that, right? 1948, founding of the State of Israel. Boom. It's pure coincidence, but it's an easy way to remember it. Okay. So if he's born in 1948, and then you're only talking after Avram comes Yitzchak, next generation, then comes Yaakov, then come the 12 tribes, right? Joseph brothers, all that stuff. And then they go down to Egypt. So yeah, Rick is right. It's approximately 2,000 years. So much so, I know this because how many years are they in Egypt? How many years are they enslaved?
210.
210 years. And they left in what year?
I don't know, but it was 3,336 years ago.
Let's do the math. It was in 2448, 2448. That's the Hebrew year. Exactly 500 years from Avram's birth. That's how
Oh.
you remember it. 1948, 2448. Okay. So you're talking about approximately 2,000 years, right? Basically, a little more than 2,000 years. What is the continuity? I mean, to build the nation, it wasn't just 10 generations from Adam to oh, boom, then he got it right. Then you have Avraham, everything's going great. Are you kidding? It took almost 2,500 years to develop this concept. And what was the one thing that continuity was able to be provided by? Family unit. That's the only reason we made it through. Family unit. So, if you want to know why are we reading the book of Bereishis? Why? What is it all about? There's a million lessons to learn, but at least one common theme that the book of Bereishis teaches us is the importance of strong family units. It has to be for us to survive. Now, hold on. Okay, here's where let's just here two ideas that we touched on, but I'll present it a little more succinctly. Two core ideas. Number one, families are made up of diverse people. We're not a homogeneous family. How many of you feel like you are exactly the same as all your siblings? No, you have similarities, yes, but we are very different. I say this all the time. Thank God I'm blessed with six natural children. I was convinced by the time number four, or for sure number five, came around that the law of averages would have kicked in and I would have gotten two of the same. Oh no, I got six very different children. Similarities, yes. Techniques that worked for one were a dismal failure with the second. And what worked for number two was even worse for number three. It just, they're all different. But that's part of the beauty. If families were exactly the same, homogeneous, just carbon copies of each other, then how can I use that as a springboard to show care and concern for somebody from another family? Totally different. No, families are diverse for a reason. They have to be. They share DNA, and they have very different personalities, different needs, different goals, different dreams. That's the way it works. So when you have a strong family unit and you learn to navigate it, you are ready to move on and extend that to the next group, whether it's your friends, your neighbors, or to go even further, the entire nation. And then this other point, as I said, it's clear how important a strong and nurturing family environment is for children to develop these healthy into healthy adults. If they're not developed in their youth, that they don't see it modeled in their homes by parents, aunts, uncles, things like that, it's very difficult for them to then have it out in the real world. I can tell you this without a doubt in my head. There's an aunt and uncle, my father's brother and his wife, had a tremendous impact on me personally. I grew up, my first 10 or 11 years, I saw them periodically, but then we moved. My parents moved to not far from where they were. The same city wasn't right there. It was probably a half hour walk to get there, but they started playing a much more prominent role in my life. And I learned a lot of lessons from them. One in particular, they would go to every family simcha. They went to every family simcha unless they were out of the country. And I asked them once, and I said, why? I mean, I appreciate it. It's so wonderful that they make this effort. And they told me the following. They said that they were invited to a, I'll say bar mitzvah. I think that's what it was. A bar mitzvah. They were living in Muncie, New York, about an hour north of the city, north of Manhattan. And they were invited to a bar mitzvah in Brooklyn. I'm sorry, it was a wedding. Now I remember. It was a wedding in Brooklyn. And they said, I don't want to schlep into Brooklyn. It's an hour drive and I got to deal with the traffic and I got the tolls. And, for anybody who's ever traveled in and out of New York, as the sign correctly says, forget about it, right? Just, I wish I could. But they said, nah, we're not going. All right, that's the decision they made. The very next day, a relative passed away and there was a funeral in Brooklyn the next day. And of course, they went. They're not going to miss the funeral. They went. And on the drive in, they said to themselves, look at this. Just yesterday, we had an opportunity to participate in a family wedding. The family wedding. And we, I don't want to schlep. But for a good event like that, they blew it off. But for a funeral, they said, oh, we have to go. We have to. Why? He said, that's so silly. Why not grab the opportunities to go for the family simchas also? And from that day forward, they made a decision that if they're in the country, they're going to go. And they imparted that. They came to everybody's simcha. It made a tremendous impact on me. Having a strong, healthy family relationship of where it's not just parents, it's not just siblings, it's aunts, uncles, cousins. Think about it in your own life. Are there cousins that you grew up with or nearby that you've remained closer than, let's say, other cousins? Am I the only one?
No, I have.
There's no question that you have, when you have a healthy, extended family unit, it becomes really the proving ground of tremendous growth. Individually and as a family, and ultimately as a nation. That's really why it has to be that way. It has to be centered this way. So yeah, you may have a friend in Chase Manhattan Bank, but in the Bank Leumi, the Israeli bank, your mishpacha, everything comes down to family. So I want you, as we read the Parshios in the book of Bereishis, keep this thought in mind. Look at it through the lens of a family unit. Don't just read it as a story of, oh, their sibling rivalry. Look at it and say, how do they deal with it as a family? What mistakes did they make? How did they perhaps overcome it? What would I have done differently? Are you surprised? Who in the family stepped up? Was it an older sibling? Was it a younger sibling? I'm always fascinated to look at the 12 tribes. Who's helping whom? I'll give you an example. The story of Joseph and his brothers. Yes? So who's the first one that tries to save Yosef? Who's the first of the brothers who really is intent on trying to save him from the plot to kill him? Anybody?
Was it Reuven?
Reuven. Now, do you find that strange? On the one hand, you say no. What's the pecking order? Where is Reuven in the pecking order?
The top. No,
He's
youngest.
the oldest. right?
Old?
He's
He's the
still
firstborn.
firstborn. Who? Yosef has dreams of what? What are Joseph's dreams? Give me the theme of his dreams.
Gonna be Lord over his brothers.
Lord over his brothers. Who should feel the most threatened? Would it not be Reuven?
Yeah.
Yeah. And yet Reuven is the first one to jump in to say, I want to save my brother. Interesting. Would you have expected that? If your younger brother, okay, Brad, pay attention. If your younger brother is trying to take away the mantle of leadership of the family from you, how quick are you going to be to go save him? You're going to be like, yeah, teach that punk a lesson. I'm just, I, theoretically, of course, I'm just throwing it out there.
Sure.
No? Is that not astounding that it's Reuven? Read the Parshios with family in the perspective now. Read, look at the stories and ask yourself, what's different? What's strange about this? It's not what I anticipated. How about the father-son relationship when it comes to Yitzchak giving the blessings to Esav and Yaakov? And how is it that Rivka aligns herself with Jacob, but Isaac ident and you know he aligns himself with Esau, and he's tricked. And what's how does that all play out? What are Yaakov and Riv What are Yitzchak and Rivka thinking? Shouldn't they be speaking with one voice as parents? You hear what I'm saying? Like you can read all the stories, but look at it with a new lens this year. I know you know the stories. Don't read it for the storyline that you know. It's not going to change. I guarantee you, it's going to happen. They're going to sell him. They're going to sell his brother. Joseph's going to get thrown in the pit. Sorry, spoiler alert. Okay? But look at it from a totally different perspective this year. Read the story of Cain and Abel. Go back to this week's Parsha. There's so many anomalies that strike me. For example, who's older, Cain or Abel?
Cain.
I think it's Cain. It's not clear, but it seems like it is. Okay. Cain off. Who came up with the idea of bringing an offering first? Cain or Abel? Whose idea was it? They both brought an offering.
Was Cain.
Cain came up with the idea. Whose did God like?
Abel.
Why? Wasn't it Cain's idea? How would you feel? Dad, pick on you, whichever brother you want to pick on. I don't care, right? You and your brother are out there doing something, and you came up with the idea, and it's like, oh, that's a great idea. And your other brother outdoes you. Yeah. How's that make you feel? How would you react? Is Cain so far off? He's ticked off. But read the words. What bothered him? Oh, if you let's play the story out, gentlemen. Come on. You and your brother, you came up with the idea, and your brother follows suit, and his is accepted by God, and yours is not. You're upset. Agreed? What are you upset about? Which aspect? Never thought about that, huh? Well, I'll tell you what the Torah says. After a period of time, Cain brought an offering to Hashem of the fruit of the ground. And as for Abel, he also brought of the firstlings of his flock and from their choices. Hashem turned to Abel and to his offering, but to Cain and to his offering he did not turn. This annoyed Cain exceedingly, and his countenance fell. What's he upset about?
You could have brought better.
Okay, that's not why he's upset. He takes it out on his brother.
He's upset because it was his idea.
Is that it? Which part? There's two aspects of the story. One, he thought of the idea first, right? And then Abel came after him. As Irv correctly pointed out, his offering was okay, wasn't top of the line. Abel's was top of the line, the choicest of there. But then God, which aspect ticked him off? That his offering was not accepted, or that Abel's was accepted? There's a
Doesn't
big
it have to
difference.
do with Cain's offering came from the ground and it required more work than shepherding?
Then why wasn't his accepted? Why
Because
didn't?
it wasn't the best of his crops, where Abel's was.
Maybe, but maybe we can add to that a little bit
But
also.
Hashem knew that.
Let's
Okay,
go with that, Fred. But let me
it's
add
the
one more
intent of
piece.
Hashem. It's because first of all, Hashem didn't need the offerings. But
Okay.
it was the gratitude, it was the way to show gratitude to Hashem, and Abel's was better.
I'll add to that. That's a great point. Tell me, what is the story that precedes this story of Cain and Abel? What is the story in the Torah? This is chapter 4. What's chapter 3? Folks, it was just yesterday.
Adam and Eve get kicked out of the Garden of Eden.
Okay, and there's punishments for everybody involved in eating from the tree they weren't supposed to, correct?
Yes.
Okay. How is Adam punished?
He has to sweat and toil for his food.
Okay. Yeah. And what happens when he toils and he sweats? What's it going to produce? It's food. Nope. Not what my Torah says. I'll read you what my book says. Chapter 3, verse 17. To Adam, he said, because you listened to the voice of your wife. So that's the first mistake he made. No, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. Just kidding. I'm going to get quoted on that. He
Well, it
said,
is
because you listened
recorded.
to the voice of your wife and ate of the tree about which I commanded you, saying, you shall not eat of it. Accursed is the ground because of you. The ground is cursed. Through suffering shall you eat of it all the days of your life. Thorns and thistles shall it sprout for you, and you shall eat the herb of the field. By the sweat of your brow shall you eat bread until you return to the ground from which you were taken, for you are dust, and to dust you shall you return. What is the first words out of Hashem's mouth to Adam? Because you made the mistake and you ate from that tree, cursed is the ground. The ground is no longer going to be your friend and just give you very indiscriminately all the good stuff. Number one, it's going to be cursed and you're going to have to work at it and work at it. And even after you work at it, you're not necessarily going to get stuff good. Thorns, thistles, weeds, dandelions. I can't get rid of these blasted dandelions, right? It comes up. And then even finally you produce sweat of your brow. You'll make bread. Okay. Accursed is the ground. Adam and Eve know this. Cain and Abel know this. If you want to bring an offering to God, what is the one thing you will not want to bring? Fred?
Produce from the ground.
Ding, 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 ding. So right away, you see, while Cain did bring an offering, it was definitely his idea, but he went ahead and he's giving to God the thing that he got himself just potched. God himself said, the cursed is the ground. That's what you're going to give back to God? So not so simple that it was the best, not even close. But when Cain sees that Abel's is accepted, that's when he loses it. It's not so much that his was not accepted, it's that Hevel's was. As siblings, that's what gets in our craw more than anything else. Not that I wasn't successful, but that someone else was. It's another level of understanding in the rivalry. And it goes throughout. What's the story with? How about Noah, right? Talk about next week's parsha already. What was Noah? Was Noah a righteous guy? I know. Quote me the Rashi, right? Yes, in his generation, everybody knows that. At the end of the day, does the Torah call him righteous? Yes or no? Yes, it
Yes.
does. Noah was a righteous guy. No question. Nobody argues on that point. The only argument they have is had he been in a different generation, would he have been so righteous? But he was. He was a righteous ish tzaddik. He was a righteous man. How many people did he save? Right. Jeff is putting up a big fat zero, right? He only his family. That's all it was. It was him and his wife, his three kids and their wives. That's it. Eight people that already had their stamp, their visa was stamped to save. How many else? How many people from the entire world was he able to save? None. Zero. Why?
They
How can
wouldn't
that
listen
be?
to him.
Why? Listen, Irv, I'm not I don't consider myself nearly as righteous as Noah. I'm not. Yeah. But I feel like people sometimes listen to me. In fact, some people even remember what I say, which is amazing, right? Noah couldn't influence. I get it. Maybe he wasn't the outreach professional. Okay. But nobody? Why? It's a big discussion.
Yes, it
As
is.
opposed to 10 generations later, Avraham, who is the outreach expert. What changed? These are the questions you have to ask yourself as you read the stories. Did it have to do with something? Maybe, I'm just throwing it out there for you to consider. Maybe Noah was too family oriented and wasn't willing to extend beyond his immediate nuclear family.
Yeah,
Yeah,
because
he built the boat. I get it. You ever hear the expression in Yiddish, a tzaddik in pelts? Do you ever hear that expression, Irv?
no.
Anybody know, everyone hear that expression? A tzaddik in pelts means a tzaddik in fur. He's wearing fur. Pelts is fur. What's the expression? Is because if let's say everybody's cold, everybody's freezing, it's cold outside. There's two ways that you can get warmed up. One is you put on a nice coat, you put on a winter coat, and you warm. The other is you light a fire. If you light a fire, you can also get warmed up. But you know what the benefit of lighting a fire is? Others can also warm themselves by it. When you put on your coat, the only one who gets warm is you. Noach's failure was because he was a tzaddik, righteous, but he was only interested in making sure he was righteous. He, with his family, he's going to the other extreme of what I'm suggesting, where the family unit is just to be as a springboard to apply to others. You learn it in the family. And that's why it's such a fundamental core principle of Judaism to have a family unit. And from there, you build so that you can reach out to others and the nation and all, et cetera, et cetera. That's where Noach failed. He didn't go beyond the family. That's not what we're expected to do. Avraham said, no, I have love in my family. I want more. I want children. I want this. I want that. Okay. But I learn to go outside of myself. That's the
Yeah.
big difference.
Maybe Abraham's best attribute that we all know is kindness, and maybe that's what Noah wasn't able to display. And we know that everybody followed Abraham.
Correct. Correct. But I think it ties into this idea of extending yourself. What is kindness? Extending yourself outside of yourself to
Yeah,
others.
yeah,
Well,
yeah.
but that's exactly the idea. Noah was cold. Noah had a challenge. How am I going to remain righteous amongst all of the degenerates in my society? I know I'll become insular. I'll put on the fur. I'll put on the winter coat. I'll remain righteous. I'll get my family winter coats, but that's it. I really feel this is a great project for everybody to work on for the next, couple of months. to look at the Parshios, whether you go to shul or not. Take time, read the stories, but look at it with a family focus. How would you have done it differently? Or what's unique about it? That's, I think, is something that we can gain tremendously going forward with this. What do you think? Sound like a fair project?
Yes.
Great. Okay. In the remaining 2 minutes, I'm open to suggestions of what you guys want to cover this year for our class. Ideas that may be of interest to you. I'm open to them. I do have veto power, but I'm going to at least be willing to entertain it. You want to think about it?
Yeah.
No one's going to think about it. As soon as we hang up this call, everybody's like, eh, whatever. Let me go check. Well, I'm not. I wasn't. I may have been born at night, but it wasn't last night. Does anybody even care? I just choose a topic and you're like, yeah, whatever.
I like when you tie to the Parsha. That's always interesting. You always come up with something interesting when you do that. And then holidays, when the holidays come around. Can't
Okay. Parsha is now on the table. Okay. Do you want to do something text-based or you prefer not text-based?
What do you mean when you say text-based?
That
Like, oh.
there's a text that we actually learn, we read, and discuss.
Okay, from what area,
I
though?
don't know. I mean, I'm open to ideas.
Okay.
I have a few of thoughts on my own, but you know. As a general rule, come on, Howard. You always have something to say.
Well, you may be sorry that you asked me. I've always been fascinated with the book, The Way of God. There's so much there that, you could accept it on face value, but where did it come from? And I would love to explore that book with you.
Okay. The book of Derech Hashem, The Way of God, by Rav Moshe Chaim Luzzatto.
Oh.
Fascinating, fascinating book. It's a core reading of Jewish philosophy. Okay. That's a long project.
I had been studying the Sivas
The Slonim
HaShoalem.
HaRebbe? Boy, boy, wow. I really asked for this one.
It's Parsha.
But you're studying it.
Well, I mean, we were doing it. We hadn't done it in a while. I was doing it online with Jordy and Ben Katz, Rabbi Katz, and my he's my
Cousin.
cousin, and
Yep.
yeah, Tinek, and he gave the class. And so I don't know if we're going to start it up again, but we did it for, like, I don't know, six months maybe or
You did
something.
it inside or you spoke it outside?
What do you mean?
I'm saying you use the actual text itself or you
Oh
just
yeah. Oh yeah. He go through it line by line.
So that's interesting. Maybe combining some of these ideas of taking something textual, right, on the Parsha, and maybe every now and then throwing in a little Derech Hashem for Howard there.
Yeah, because it's a more in-depth,
Yeah.
more it's a, how do you explain it? It's
Yeah, there's a lot of meat on it. There's a lot of meat on that bone.
yeah.
He's got good stuff. He
It's
does.
good. It's very popular. People like it. I like it. It's interesting.
Yeah, I don't like to do what's popular.
It's not popular with this group. They probably never learned it yet.
Any other suggestions? I'm just taking it all in here. Let me get one more. Anybody else? Come on, Mr. Abner. Nothing. It's
I'm
the
open.
first.
I like Parsha though, but that's just me.
Okay. What do you got, Jeff? Anything?
I like Parsha too, but I don't mind. I wouldn't mind getting more in depth necessarily on a certain part of a Parsha or something like that.
Okay. Okay.
But I could like a lot of other things too. I mean, I'm just like saying, you know, because I'm not thinking like I'm sure you got a lot of things you could talk about that would be very interesting. So I'm open to it, you know?
Fine. So let me do this. Let me go to the drawing board and see if I can craft something that maybe is Parsha related, maybe with the text taking it in, but making sure that there's, you know, not just a nice thought, but something that's got a little more depth to it. Get you guys to a deeper level.
Stand on.
Yeah. Okay. Let's see if we can work on that. I like that idea. Maybe Howard, you and I will pick up this Derech Hashem. I don't know how to do that in a setting like this. It's really hard, especially if you're reading, you know, you have to read it like a whole bunch of paragraphs at one time to really get the gist of where he's going with it. It's hard to break it down line by line. But let's see. I have to think about that one also.
I mean, it blows my mind how he could have written that book. You know, I keep trying to understand that. I mean, not only do you have to know the Torah, but you know, this whole Kabbalah, you know, the mystical side. I mean, where do all these notions come from? If you could share that with me before I'm gone, I'd appreciate it.
You going on vacation anytime soon?
Well, you never know. It's up to Hashem.
Oh, I didn't mean that vacation. Okay.
That's no big deal.
Fair enough. All right. Thank you, gentlemen. Have an awesome week.
Thank you, Rabbi.
Thank you, Rabbi.
Thank you.
Pleasure.
Thank you.